Hi, it's Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you for listening to The Worker's Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, fighting every day for working families. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show, and remember, it's better in a union.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to The Worker's Mic on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. I'm Phil Davidson, and we have a special edition this morning for you all, this Easter Sunday. I am recording the show from my hotel room in Kansas City, Missouri. And with me is my trusted sidekick, my better half, my life partner, Bridget Shanahan. Bridget, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me today, and I'm glad you fixed calling me your sidekick and added in that I'm your better half, because that's the actual truth.
Yes, I thought better of it as soon as I mentioned up that you're my sidekick. Like, that's not going to go over with my aunt and my mom when they listen to the show. So thank you for saving us. Listeners, you'll notice that Ken and Ed aren't here, but we made it happen. We showed up. We punched in the clock like we do, because I'm here recording the show in Kansas City because my plane home was diverted because of all the storms in Chicago. So, you know, I bleed for this show, everyone. Ken and Ed, you know, they'll show up if it's, you know, a mild inconvenience. But when it comes down to really, you know, who takes care of our listeners, it's myself and Bridget. And I think our listeners know Bridget. She's been a correspondent for the show from occasionally, did some field reporting for us back at the AFL days and the union days back in Springfield over the summer. So
yeah,
we always appreciate you filling in, Bridget. And thank you, especially on this Easter Sunday. We're hosting today.
Yes.
So I got to get home ASAP so we can celebrate. So thanks again. And what do you have prepared for today? Let's make our listeners jealous.
Oh, we are having ham and lamb and some whipped feta, au gratin potatoes, lots of salads, coconut cake.
Wow.
Yes.
My mouth is watering.
Yes, it's going to be a good Easter. And I'm so happy to be here. We got to talk to Hakeem Jeffries last time. I was acting as a correspondent for the Workers' Mic, so it's cool to actually be in the studio this time.
Yes. Just don't get too comfortable. Okay?
Well, and we should say I'm a labor person too.
That's right. You know, you're not just a wife of a media star and labor leader like yourself.
Yeah.
You are your own woman, and you are your role is communications director for the Illinois Education Association. And I think we've gone over this on the show before, but come from a strong labor family. I mean, there's everywhere you turn in your family, someone is in a union position. So you walk the walk. In addition to talk the talk.
Yes. Well, I'm media relations director. Communications director is my manager. So,
oh, that's my job is communications director.
That's right. Yeah, I'm a third generation.
You'll get there someday, honey. We're proud of you.
One day. Well, I'm very happy in my role. It's awesome. I get to work with members all over the state. And like you said, I'm from a big union family. Third generation union member myself, and you know, my brothers work for labor unions. My dad was in a union. My cousin's the vice president of a different one. So it's great to be here.
Well, thank you. And later on in the show, we're going to have a friend and colleague of mine, Al Jotatis. He is the safety director for the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council, talking about some stuff going on in the safety world. And, you know, there's been some we had a tragedy in our union recently. We lost a member. We're going to talk a little bit about that and just, you know, what Al does every day to work to keep, you know, our members and safe and our contractors out of harm's way. And we got a lot of, yeah, Bridget, we're going to talk about some stuff going on in the teachers union world. So, yeah, it's going to be a jam-packed show. One thing that just is that we've been following on the show, we got a recent development that directly tied into my travels was TSA agents are finally getting paid. God bless them for going. I mean, did they get up to 6 weeks without a paycheck?
Yeah, it was upwards of a month.
Yeah, and you know, they from what I've been hearing, when we're going to get in touch with our TSA local here soon. We were hoping to have them on potentially this week, but obviously things getting all turned around because of the holiday and all the flight cancellations. We will get them on shortly, but you know, from what I've been reading about it, it's still hard for them to make ends meet. I mean, yes, they're going to get back pay, and it was all because of the executive order that the president signed to get them paid. Of course, our do-nothing Congress can't get anything done, and they still haven't can't agree on funding for DHS, which would pay them. But the president said, no, all right, well, I'm going to sign an executive order. How that works exactly, I need a constitutional scholar to explain to me, because I always thought Congress had the power of the purse, but apparently the president would just be like, no, we're going to pay them. I'm going to sign this piece of paper. So,
well, and it was just TSA, too. And like you said, it wasn't even – it's not their full amount of back pay either. And
yes,
I think most Americans live paycheck to paycheck, unfortunately, and can't imagine what it would be like to suddenly have your paycheck not coming for 6 weeks. And then on top of it, you're showing up every day at the airport, which I think is a tough job. I mean, you've got people who are flying, they're under stress and pressure, they're running late, they're upset with you for taking, you know, their liquids and things that they forgot that were in their carry-on.
Right.
And all the while, you're not getting paid. I mean, that's and the lines were astronomical, too.
I know. Not all travelers handle flight disruptions as gracefully as I do. You know, a lot of people get blow their stack, but
I do
not. And those TSA were they're not highly paid. You know,
no.
I think the average salary is like, you know, 50,000 or something. So yeah, it's a tough job. It's obviously incredibly essential job, especially with everything happening in the Middle East and Iran, and you know, some of the hardliners in Iran are not too happy what's going on in the United States, and so we're certainly at heightened security level. So
right.
We need all of them. We're glad they're getting paid, and let's make this permanent, because that money could run out. It was temporary, and just thank you to all the TSA agents for all the hard work you've been doing for free for all these past weeks, and you know, you're finally getting your paycheck, but we appreciate you.
Yes.
We are going to get into some education related discussion coming up in our next segment. So let's go ahead and take a break. And then when we come back, we'll talk about some cool stuff that, you know, your union, the Illinois Education Association, is doing. And we'll talk about some new legislation in Springfield that is pulling together coalitions of various unions. And yeah, we'll hear more after these messages. And we'll see you in the next segment on the Workers' Mic, 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic on 720 WGN. I'm Phil Davidson, today with my fill-in host and my wife, Bridget Shanahan. And Bridget, let's talk about some education-related topics. We lost a giant of the educational labor world last week. Someone who you didn't have the pleasure of working with directly, but you had met over time in the course of your career with the Illinois Education Association. Reg, tell us a little about Reg.
Yeah, Reg Weaver, like you said, he was just a giant. He died at the age of 86, and he was instrumental in so many educators' careers. He was a mentor figure. He's the kind of person where if you met him, he instantly wanted to try and help you. He was very warm. He believed in the movement. Originally from Danville, went to ISU. He went on to become the president of his local in Harvey, Illinois, in the south suburbs. And then he became president of the IEA in the 80s. And he went on to become the president of the National Education Association as well. And really, his legacy beyond just being an incredible person, the ultimate unionist and supporter. I mean, he helped pass the collective bargaining law for educators. So it's called the Illinois Educational Labor Relations Act, the IELRA. This was done under Reg Weaver's leadership, and it was pretty unconventional for the time. This was done under a Republican governor, Jim Thompson, Big Jim, and Reg had a great relationship with Jim, and the IEA had a lot of boots on the ground organizing for this. Other educators were organizing for it as well. The IEA actually wrote the law that ended up passing. And what's interesting is that this law passed years after other states had already had collective bargaining for educators. Illinois was one of the last states in the union to get it, which is kind of surprising considering what a union forward state we are.
Yeah. How strong we are. That's great. Hold on. Let me just rewind for a second here.
Mm-hmm.
A Republican signed a collective bargaining bill?
That's right. That's
wow.
Right. Yeah.
Wow. How times have changed.
Yes. We have this really amazing clip of Big Jim on the news after he signed the bill, and he came actually to an IEA board meeting and signed it at our board meeting. And the clip on the news says, when the IEA asked me to sign their bill, there was no way I wasn't going to sign it. So it was really a historic relationship, one that was very much out in the open and well-known during the time. And it really has changed public education in Illinois. So anybody who sends their kids to school, anybody who you know, pays taxes in the state because their tax dollars go to help fund our public schools, this impacts you. And it really set the stage to limit class sizes. Before this, there was no way to tell the school districts. I mean, we could tell the school districts, right, that there were too many kids in the class for them to learn effectively, but there was no enforcement mechanism. And this gave us the right to go out on strike if the conditions weren't met. And it helped create all sorts of jobs like paraprofessionals who help support teachers. So it was a really big thing that Reg did. And it's not the only thing, but it is certainly a really big legacy. And you know, we recently
is it safe to say that every public school teacher in Illinois owes a debt of gratitude to Reg Weaver?
Yeah, I would say so. And I would say that if he and every educator, every paraprofessional, every, you know, support staff person, every security person, every, you know, cafeteria worker or secretary, all of the folks who make our schools run and operate efficiently, this makes sure we have the correct supplies for our students to learn. I mean, there were schools that didn't have enough books for everybody, things like that. I mean, it was really a different time when you think about it. But it
really was. Yeah. I mean, that was contentious. I remember hearing that. I mean, teachers were getting arrested, right, when they
were thrown in jail. Yeah, because we weren't allowed to go on strike, but they still went on strike. And a lot of folks say, oh, well, teachers have the right to strike in Illinois, which a lot of states don't have. And that means that there's, you know, all these teacher strikes. That's not true, actually. Yeah. Since we got the law, we have far fewer strikes in Illinois because the school districts are now required to negotiate with the union. They are required to give us a seat at the table and listen to us. And and the other thing I'll say about
teachers deserve every penny they get.
As a parent of two young children, we know that firsthand. I am always so grateful for the good educators at our public school. But I have to say one other thing about Reg is he mentored a lot of folks, which I mentioned. And I met him when I did a video about the collective bargaining law. But he would still send me text messages periodically. Hey, it's a really hard time to be in communications and labor unions. You're doing a great job, that sort of thing. And he was also the mentor of our late president from the IEA, Al Lorenz, who passed away last fall. They're from the same area, from the south suburbs. And it just, you know, produces a lot of great leaders. And I know Reg was mentoring, you know, quite a few leaders and helped usher in a lot of great folks. I mean, that's what they say about great union leaders, right? Is your job is to, when you step down from your position, you got to make sure there's somebody strong who can step into your shoes and step up to the occasion. And he really did that.
Yes. Well, rest in peace, Reg, and thank you for everything you've done for educators and for the labor movement writ large. And, you know, we were talking about teachers earlier and the importance of them. Of course, now we're seeing with AI a lot of proposals slipping through the cracks. You know, we had the First Lady parading at the White House with a new robot that she says is going to be the future of education. There's now a school in Chicago, the Alpha School, that is utilizing AI exclusively. There's no teachers in the classroom. It only costs $55,000 a year to send your five-year-old to school. But I think this is just insane that you could think that in this case, this is even a robot. This is just a language model on a computer is going to educate your child. I mean, there's so much more that goes into teaching beyond just imparting knowledge and rote learning from a book. It's the social interaction. It's learning how to develop. And this idea that we're going to delegate all this authority and responsibility to computers is just crazy to me. But that's just a little aside. But we need to protect our teachers. And again, I will say this on every show, all about jobs right now, because I mean, who would have thought that, you know, a teacher would be one of the most stable jobs you would consider in any environment, in any society, in any technological age. And now that job is potentially under threat. I mean, like, what is going on here, people? Yeah. And anyone who says, oh, teachers, you know, they get paid too much, I don't like when they go on strike, I mean, really, really rethink your position on that. And do you want to teach your kids? No. Do you want a computer to teach your kids? I sure hope not. We need teachers, obviously, and we need people that have fulfilling jobs and careers that allow them to sustain a family. Because when we lose that, what are we anymore? Well, that's a larger topic. I don't want to get into existential threats right now, but I just had to get on my soapbox for a quick second there.
Well, I'm right there with you. And I think you hit the nail on the head when it comes to social emotional learning. I mean, we talk a lot about educating the whole child, and like, you know, kids show up to school and they have all sorts of stressors at home that they come to school with. And our teachers recognize that. They work through it. They recognize, hey, like, maybe this isn't going to go the way I planned today because, you know, so-and-so's upset. So I'm going to do this special thing for this child. I don't trust that a robot can do that. You also have got security issues. I mean, we've got cybersecurity issues in this country, and it's very alarming to think about, you know, a robot teaching school. And I think, to your point, Phil, there is just no way that a robot's ever replacing a person as an educator. There is just no replacement for it. I mean, we saw that during COVID. I mean, people were on their computers trying to learn, quote unquote, and how well did that go for us? So now we got a whole school trying to do that. It just doesn't make any sense. And their people are paying up the wazoo for it, like you said.
Agreed. Well, let's move on to what's going on currently in Springfield. I know there's an Unemployment Equity Act that's been proposed that some unions, including yours, are rallying behind.
Yeah, there's a
coalition.
Big,
tell us a little more about that.
Yeah, there's a big AFL coalition around the Unemployment Equity Act. A bunch of unions are on board with this. AFSCME, SEIU, IFT, IEA. A lot of folks are supporting this because they're considered part-time. So paraprofessionals, cafeteria workers, bus drivers, maintenance folks, you know, computer services sometimes, security guys, all those folks that aren't teachers, right, that aren't licensed professionals in our schools. Those are what we call support staff. And those folks, they work full-time year-round, but over the summer, they don't get paid.
And they lose their benefits, correct?
Correct. And it causes such a hardship for these folks. I mean, we literally have members who mow lawns to make extra money. They have 2 and 3 jobs. They have 2 and 3 jobs during the school year. Their wages are so low. And then you get to the summer and they're doing the same thing. It creates such a hardship for them. So this Unemployment Equity Act is all about getting them paid when they're not employed by the school district, so that they can make their ends meet, that they don't have to deal with the stress. And we had a wonderful member. Her name's Deborah Ward Mitchell. She's actually from the South Suburbs as well. A lot of great leaders from there. She works at Thornton High School. Her job is so important. She helps run a nursery there for students who have children, and she watches those kids and she helps those students. Deborah gives the money, the little money that she has in her pockets, to her students when they need it. She buys diapers, she buys food, she does all of these things. And she's got a son at home who's special needs, and she struggles to make ends meet. And she spoke at a committee hearing this week about that. And so we've got a little clip of her sharing some of her story, talking about the hardship that we're going to play for you right now.
Yeah, let's roll that clip, please.
I never thought I would stay in this profession, but the longer I stayed, the more I was honored to be supporting future doctors, lawyers, politicians, flight attendants, pilots, bus drivers, legislative staffers. The list goes on and on. In my 42 years tenure as an education support professional, I was instrumental in those professions. They were my former students who had those jobs. Why is the price I have to pay for choosing supporting those students my very livelihood? Why do I have to make a decision between me getting medications I need or getting medications for my special needs son? Not everyone can be a CEO, the lead, the person in charge. This world depends on its support staff in every profession. And when we choose to support you as a leader, it should not be at the cost of our own well-being. Having summer unemployment means having food for the months of June through August. It means being able to purchase much needed medication. It means being able to put my child in a positive, organized summer activity where they can thrive and go. As my colleague said, it would mean survival. Thank you for your time.
Those were powerful words from Deborah, and we're happy to report that the Unemployment Equity Act did pass out of the House Labor Committee. So hopefully we'll see it move along in Springfield and make it to the floor and become legislation. So that was great. And we'll be right back with more from the Workers' Mic here on 720 WGN.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Workers' Mic. More show to come, sponsored by Hinge Health.
Hinge Health specializes in personalized digital exercise therapy designed for hardworking people, just like you. It's pain relief without waiting rooms and costly medications. Visit hingehealth.com today. Now, back to the show.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back to The Workers' Mic on 720 WGN. I'm Phil Davidson with Bridget Shanahan, and it's my pleasure to welcome my friend and colleague, Al Jotatis, who is the safety director for the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council. Welcome, Al.
How are you doing today, Phil?
Well, I've been better, Al. As you know, Al was also on the same trip with me and also was stuck on his flight back home. And his case is even much more severe than mine, where he was stuck on the tarmac for, I don't know, 5 hours, had to get on a bus, got rerouted to Rockford. I mean, but still made it here on Easter Sunday to record this show. So that is just what Mid-America Carpenters are built out of. We're tough. We're resilient. We show up. We answer the bell. And Al personifies that. So again, thank you for being here. And we want to take some time just to talk a little bit, you know, let's learn a little more about, you know, your background, how you got into safety. And, you know, I mentioned at the top of the show, we had a tragedy within our brotherhood where we lost a member and, we can go over a little bit about that and, you know, the measure that you take to investigate and make sure that these types of accidents are, you know, as preventable as humanly possible. But tell us a little about yourself and, you know, what got you into the Carpenters Union and what, you know, specifically led you toward safety.
Well, for the Carpenters Union now with the council, it'll be 10 years in August. And how I got involved with the Carpenters Union is I used to work for the apprenticeship for 15 years. And working in the apprenticeship, other than teaching the commercial trade, we also have opportunities to teach in other departments. And I also taught OSHA classes and got very involved. And seeing how our council at that time, we have a safety department for 29 years to this year. Wow. So back then when I was in, we had a safety department to understand what we could do for our contractors and our members gave me a big interest. So in 2016, when they had opportunities as our industry was growing, they had a chance for me to be on their team. And they gave me a call a couple years later saying if I was interested in it. And I started as assistant safety director. And then now to my position now as safety director, I get involved going to meet all the contractors to make sure that when we do safety visits in all of our regions, that we're letting them aware if we see any hazards, we want to make sure that they take care of them so our members will not get injured or further, and then they could keep on working. And also our contractors could keep on visiting and bidding future jobs. Because, right. Phil, one thing that's important is it's like car insurance. You get into a couple accidents, your rates go up high.
Oh, yeah.
The demands of the insurance industry now are requiring that our contractors are being safe on the site in order to bid it. So when members don't realize that, why didn't our company win that bid? A lot of companies didn't win the bid because the other company just had their insurance cheaper, and that's what allowed them to win it. But in a good way, it's changing the industry now to make sure that all job sites have to be safe.
Yeah, and because you'll actually save our signatory contractors money, right? Because you can remediate if they do have an OSHA violation. You can work directly with OSHA and discuss, you know, what steps you take to help them. And obviously, there's different penalties if it was a known offense or if it was something that would have been reasonably known versus something that was, you know, a purely an accident. But you're able to mediate on those, right, and help them. So, yes, they don't have to pay those stiff penalties that someone who didn't have, you know, routine interaction with the safety department would have.
The thing that our contractors are realizing, they're using us as also another third party or also telling the companies when they're bidding they're going to use us, because you're correct. One thing that people don't realize that when you get an OSHA citation, it stays on file for 5 years in the entire United States.
Wow.
So even if they had a company in another state, and they had the same citation as they did in another one in those 5 years, The first violation usually is an average around $11,000. But then if they got another one, we had a contractor where their sub had in another state had the same citation. It went up to $78,000. And the citation went from serious to repeat serious, which is one under willful. But one thing that is nice that since we're union representatives, we could help out these contractors to reduce the fine to say that they are being safe. You caught them on a bad day, and we have to show them all the paperwork that's necessary and all their policies. And then OSHA is not there to hurt any company. They right. just want to make sure, are you being safe? What did you do to correct any of these situations we found? Going further, then the same company could be allowed to bid future jobs.
Right, got it. And correct me if I'm wrong, Al, but I believe we are the only trade with a safety department. Is that right?
It's amazing, Phil, yes. Everybody has either a third party or they had a representative. In our union, we actually have a staff of a safety department. There's three of us right now that handles all five states. And compared to any other trade, they don't have an in-house safety department that represents the contractors and our members.
Wow. Bridget, does the teachers union have a safety director?
We do not have a safety director.
Oh, interesting. You must not care about safety.
Well, we got some safety stuff in our collective bargaining agreements. I think it's a little different when you're a carpenter versus when you're a teacher, although everybody deserves to be safe when they're going into work.
This is true. Well, we have top-notch, led by Al, yes, covering our states of Illinois, Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, and Iowa. And Al does a tremendous job with his staff, with Butch, who's also been on the show before, and JD, and yeah, that's the world they live in. Every day they're out visiting job sites, talking to members, talking to contractors, making sure everybody's working safe. And occasionally, as seldomly as we can possibly hope for, but there are instances that arise when someone gets hurt. I mean, it's a dangerous job. I think working in construction has the highest or second highest rate of fatalities of any career, out there. And, I think we've got a pretty good track record thanks to the commitment of Al and safety directors of the past to make sure our members are always working safe. But again, by the nature of the job, you're working up on high rises. There are situations where someone gets hurt, and we recently had one with a member of ours, David Rodriguez, who was a member out of Local 1445 in Wichita, Kansas, died recently. And, we just want to give our respects to his family. Losing a brother is so tough. But Al, if you could tell us a little bit, what happens when, someone dies on the job? Understandably, there's going to be an investigation. OSHA gets involved. What role do you play in something like that? And, what steps are taken to make sure, again, that this would never happen again?
One thing that a lot of people don't understand is we are a resource to benefit the contractors and our members. So when a fatality happens, we are all saddened for them and the family, but everybody tends to think we're there to find fault. We're never there to find fault. One thing that all the companies realize is when they see us, they're like, great, we got another set of eyes to work with us, also to work with OSHA. So when we go to these sites, we make sure that we investigate it to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Because the hazards of construction, everybody tends to think everything's going to be okay, but we're at risk from the morning till we go home. And until this situation happens, we got to say it happened. We thought it wouldn't. What can we do to prevent it? So when our member who passed away on March 27th, we made sure that we investigated to see how he fell. He fell close to 6 to 7 stories. Oof. And there was no fault. It was just one of those things that while he was working, he lost a little balance from what it looked like and fell 7 stories. He lived, but until he got to the hospital, then he was pronounced dead. Yeah. So now we are in further investigation, as we do on all sites. How can we prevent this? And that's what makes all of our construction industry more now everybody's feeling safe on the job sites. And that's why our standards working with contractors, our numbers are very low.
Yeah. Because what's our average about, like one a year, give or take?
Well, truthfully, yes. Yeah. So in our five regions, yeah. I don't want to say a whole United States, but from my understanding, we've been having an average, which we don't want to, but one or less a year.
Yeah. Obviously we want it to be zero forever.
Yes.
But, out of, 57,000 members, I'm no mathematician, but one out of 57,000 is a pretty low rate.
And it just speaks to the importance of Al's job. I mean, that's a big job to go out there and make sure 57,000 people are safe every day. And I'm sure there's a lot of things that you've learned over the years after doing this for about a decade. But it's a big responsibility. And I imagine when you go to a job site, there are certain things that you're looking for right away that maybe are more common safety issues that you see. Would you say so, Al?
Well, you know what's amazing by that? One thing that our ESTs always make sure is we just don't have training in carpentry. We have to make sure that we have training in all the trades aspects. So when we take a walk, the first words the superintendent say, "How did you see that? That's amazing. I walk this job site every day and I didn't even notice that." So one thing that's beneficial is we're always up to date at least 6 months ahead of time for training so we can make sure that we tell all contractors what to be aware of upcoming. But also when we walk to the job sites, they're like, "Wow, you know a little bit about all trades. I'm so glad you noticed it." They all correct it immediately to make sure, because if it could happen to one trade, it could happen to any trade. So what they call near misses on jobs. And they don't want to even have near misses because that could have been a fatality or a major incident. One thing that is good about the insurance industry, what a lot of people don't know, in 2024 in the United States with signatory or non-signatory contractors, the insurance companies paid out $157 billion to claims. So when we think jobs are safe, we can't get complacent. We still have to say they're still showing that numbers are out there, that we have to be safe. But when you see those numbers and you see our statistics, our contractors are doing a great job.
Absolutely. You know that game, I'm sure Bridget used to play at the bars all the time, photo hunts, where you've got the pictures and you got to decide. They show you like two pictures that almost look identical, but there's always like something a little bit off and you have to identify them on the screen. Al, you must be a master at that, because when I show pictures to Al of job sites, because we work safe around here in my union, and everything that we post on social media of a job site has to run through the safety department to make sure that there's no violations. And I feel like, over time, I've gotten pretty good understanding of, okay, this guy's got to have his PPE on. He's got to have his safety glasses on. He's got to have his hard hat the right way. I'll show it to Al, and he'll be like, "Nope, that ladder is leaning the wrong way. Nope." It's just like unbelievable the stuff they can pick out. And I got to give Al credit because, our members, it's not always the most receptive audience when you're talking safety with them. Because, union guys are like, "I got this. I trust me." They're macho. They think they know everything about safety. But, so Al's got to go there and say, like, "Look, guys, no, you're not working safe here. This is what you need to fix." And it's a job where, you got to be sometime, you want to be helpful, but you got to really like lay down the law in certain instances. And, obviously to our members' personal and health benefits. So kudos to you for that, Al. And before we wrap up, I also want to bring up recently there was a story that made the news a couple weeks ago about the Thompson Center, and there was some, they try to make a big investigative expose out of it. It was, when I texted Al, I was like, "Yeah, we call this a nothing burger, Al." but anyways, let me rewind for a minute there. I'm not trying to make light of what was going on, but it seemed like the news story was trying to be a little bit more alarmist and, exploitative when it really didn't rise to that level. But there were some lead found in the paint at the new Google headquarters, the former Thompson Center. And so, they talked to some of the trades about there about, exposure to our members. But Al, because he's so good at his job, was way ahead of it and got there early and investigated. And yeah, Al, tell us a little bit more about, what that situation was and what you did to remediate it.
really good about our contractors and our members, when you were discussing on when you were getting phone calls, it was a good conversation to say, Phil, that was 2 weeks ago when we were on it. And you were kind of impressed. Wow, so we were ahead of the game. And that's one thing about communication. When something major happens, we get phone calls immediately. Now, remember, we're there to support the contractors. But when we went there immediately, that job site was very safe from the beginning. This happened a year and a half later. And the GCs and the subs, all their safety departments were there to work together. And then after we end up finding out what happened, everybody was still worried, because when you hear that I had lead exposure or I had some type of exposure, I know we take it to the extreme and thinking, oh, I'm affected, it's going to affect my life. But because of our training and knowledge, we were able to calm down our members and saying, everything is handled good. Your numbers, yes, but your numbers are low. Your body is just going to filter it out. And then our membership started getting calm. And there was really no worries on our aspect. And we were trying to let other people know there is no worries. Everything's being handled and taken care of. And that's one thing is the benefit about having a safety department is we were able to hear about it immediately, work with everybody and say, don't worry, the contractors are on it. And that contractor that day with Google was very going forward. They offered blood tests to anybody on the job, meaning they didn't hide nothing because they knew that there was nothing wrong. They knew there was exposure, but they knew that they did not mean it. It happened accidentally. But then when we worry about it, meaning the workforce, it gets a little bit out of hand, but it was all taken care of and there was no more worries.
Yeah, yeah. Rumors could spread like wildfire on job sites. So we were glad that you took care of business. And yeah, that was very funny. I was like, Al, because we got a call from the media. They're like, what's going on? And Al was like, we dealt with this 2 weeks ago. They're way behind the eight ball on this. So that was cool. And again, we're going to wrap up here. But Al, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for all the work that you do. Your team is second to none. And we really appreciate you.
So if I could add a little kudos to you, one thing that the membership don't realize, what you made a comment earlier, is with all the social media and everything that we do, those are the big critics to all the stuff that you show. So one thing about our networking, meaning our whole team with all our resources, there is really not that many questions that you might not get because of us looking into everything going forward. This organization, a lot of people should realize we have a lot of resources and departments, and that's why we are at the level where we're at.
Oh, absolutely, Al. And yes, you can do kudos to me all day, every day.
Be careful about that, Al. Not too much, okay?
All right, Al. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Happy Easter to you and your family. And we'll be right back with more Workers Mike on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers Mike, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers Mike on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. I'm Phil Davidson here with Bridget Shanahan, and we're going to wrap things up. That was a great interview with Al. Again, our condolences to the family of our brother, David Rodriguez. It kind of fits that at the end of this month, April 28th, is Workers' Memorial Day, where unions around the country will be rallying and holding vigils to remember our members who died on the job and anyone who's lost a life. We hold in our hearts dearly and their families. And yeah, so keep that in mind for April 28th to take a moment of silence for those workers. But before we wrap things up, Bridget, we're going to talk a little bit about a May Day campaign that is also imminent.
Yeah.
And again, some unions working together for what is historically one of the biggest pro-labor days in the country.
Yeah, it really is. And this year is a little bit different. We've got the May Day Strong Coalition. It's a national coalition. The AFL is part of this. There are several state AFLs that are involved, the National Education Association, the Illinois Education Association, lots of unions from all across the country coming together. And the idea behind this is to build towards collective action for May Day all the way through 2028. And we we are seeing, at least at the IEA, we're doing collective action amongst our members. It's a grassroots effort, and they've been doing walk-ins to their buildings. They just did one on Friday where the members come in and walk in to their building together just to show solidarity. It's not, you know, necessarily, it's not a protest of anything. It's just a positive way to show your support for public schools and public education. And so that's sort of like the whole idea behind the May Day Strong movement, is that we do action on coordinated days through all of these labor unions. And of course, May Day is coming up, which is May 1st. And there will be a big movement for that. You know, we've always got the march in downtown Chicago, but there will be some, you know, all across the state as well.
Yeah, that's a big celebration coming up. Okay, well, I think that that wraps up our show here. So again, Bridget, thank you for stepping up in a pinch and rescuing us.
Thank you.
You did a phenomenal job. And what a great husband you have, who makes sure that you are included and stuff like this. Because obviously you're always like, can I be on the show? Can I be on the show? Can I be on the show? And finally, when we were at complete dire straits, we brought you on. So.
When you had nobody else, you let me come crawl into the studio. Thanks for that.
I'm going to get a gazillion texts from my aunt saying, Bridget is so much better than you. Why are you even doing the show anymore? Put her on. So looking forward to that.
It's not wrong.
No, she's not. But happy Easter, everyone. Thanks again, Bridget. Have a great rest of your week, and we will see you next week on the Workers' Mic on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of the Workers' Mic was powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare. For additional information and podcasts of the Workers' Mic, visit WGNRadio.com.